Welcome to Hype, Hypeable.com's podcast all about entertainment. This week, we are doing a special episode all about The 100, the CW show. Not The 100, just so we're clear, it's called The 100. My name is Selena, and I'm joined for this The 100-themed episode by Karen, Kristen, and Kyle, all from Hypeable.com. Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Hi.
You are all big The 100 fans, is that right?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes. Yeah, Karen Karen and Kristen have been helping me do some awesome The 100 themed articles on Hypeable.com over the past few weeks to get everyone psyched up for the premiere of Season 3, which was only a couple of days ago, and we're all still kind of buzzing about it because it was so exciting. Or at least three-fourths of our panel today think that the episode was so exciting, but we'll get into that when we get started. It's going to be interesting. Good discussion, I'm sure. But before we get into talking about The 100, we just want to remind you of our contact information as always. If you have any thoughts about this episode or about the show in general, you can find us on hypeable.com, which is hypable.com. Click the little bar in the left-hand corner and find the podcasts and leave us a comment on the post for this episode. You can email us hype@hypeable.com. You can find us on Twitter @hypeablehype, and just for the hell of it, you can find us on Instagram @hypeablehype if that's your preferred way of sending us comments for whatever reason that is possible. So, you know, we cater for everyone. I should probably mention as well that this episode is going to be full of spoilers for The 100 Season 3 premiere. So if you have not yet seen it, then save this episode until you have to avoid ruining the experience for yourself. But before we get into talking about the specifics of the episode, we just want to really quickly just tell you, you know, who we are, what we write about for Hypeable, what other podcasts we do, how we got on board with The 100 specifically. So if you want to go first, Karen?
Sure. I'm Karen, and on Hypeable, I am a copy editor, and I'm also covering mostly Teen Wolf and Percy Jackson news, among many, many other things. I'm on four podcasts, not another Teen Wolf podcast, Onceable, Rewatchable, where we're doing Buffy right now, and Yay. Book Hype. Book Hype is the other one. Very busy, but lots of fun doing it. And let's see how I got on board with the show. Well, it's all Kristen's fault because Kristen and I are roomies and she absolutely loves the show. And I watched the pilot a long time ago. Actually, I think I was talking to you about this, Selena, back when I watched it, because I read the first book and quite enjoyed it and then watched the pilot and did not enjoy it because it was so different from the book. And I was like, yeah, maybe I'll watch it eventually, because Selena, by then you were like obsessed with it and you were just praising it. And I was like, Selena's got good taste. If she says it's good, it's probably good. Mm-hmm. But I never got back on board with it until Kristen and I moved to North Carolina. And then about a month or two ago, I think it's really recent, I'm a really new fan. We finished both season one and season two. And so I'm watching it live for the first time, and it's going to kill me slowly.
Oh, that's awesome.
I know
awesome.
It is. Mm-hmm. Because I was used to being like, giant cliffhanger? Okay, we'll just go to the next episode, and now I can't.
Yeah, that's going to be really hard. I speak from experience. During season two, around all that Finn stuff was going on, it was like on my mind constantly. Oh. I couldn't. This show, you guys. How about you, Kristen?
Hi, I'm Kristen. You can hear me. I'm usually on Onceable, and I'm on this season of Rewatchable for Buffy, which is really, really good fun. Other than that, I kind of guest here and there for things. I'm on Book Hype occasionally, and I've popped in here before, so hi, everyone. I cover the originals, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, How to Get Away with Murder, and some book stuff recently. I've picked up on some book stuff. So you can find my stuff all over the place. And as far as The 100, last December, I was writing up my Hypeable Honors article, judging like performances on TV. And Selena was like, I have to submit this guy, Thomas McDonnell. And he was amazing in this episode of The 100. And I was like, okay. And like reading the description of what was going on and seeing all of the GIFs as I was searching for GIFs for the article, like I got intrigued and I was like, this show looks really cool. So based on Selena's recommendation and all of that, I dove in and was obsessed and like watched the whole first season and half of the second in like, I don't even know, it was like a couple of days, and then rewatched it like a dozen times since then in my spare time. So I am a huge fan of The 100. It's amazing.
And you, Kyle, you're also a very new fan.
Yeah, very new. Like within the past couple months new. I'm a writer for Hypeable. I just cover Vampire Diaries, Orphan Black, and Sleepy Hollow. And I actually wrote a review about the 100 pilot.
Oh, yeah, that was you.
Yeah.
It was the first 100 article we ever wrote, and it was so negative.
I hated it. It was terrible. I like went into this like going into like awesome. All right, this looks really good. Like cool. And then I watched it, and then all I could think about during the first episode was just how like stereotypical dystopian it was, even though it really wasn't. And I was like, I don't know why. I was just like,
you got off.
And then they killed off like my
it.
Favorite character, or I think they did, because I really liked Jasper, and I got really offended, and I was like, oh, this show.
Did you watch it at Comic-Con?
No. Did I? No. Okay. I don't remember, actually, you know? But a few months and or maybe a year later, I think I was talking to you, or was it Kristen? I don't remember.
Me.
I was talking to someone, and like you kept talking about how amazing it was, especially on hype.
Does
you're
sound
like oh
me.
My god, I love the 100. Oh my gosh. And I was like, why? And so now that season one was
out. And he's
out,
still like, why?
Well, season one was out on Netflix, and I was like, all right, I'll watch the whole thing. And then I loved it. And then I waited for season two to get on Netflix, which I just binge watched. And now here I am, season three. I'm the only one who isn't like blown away by the premiere. I loved it. I mean, it was good, but I'm like, okay.
Mm-hmm. You've seen better.
Yeah.
Well, we'll get into that in a minute. I guess just to sum up these or round off these introductions, my story of how I got into The 100 was actually pretty unusual, probably, because when I first watched, I think I started watching it right around the season one finale, or I think that had just come out. So I picked it up right after the first season ended. And I started watching it because I thought it was a different show. I thought it was Julie Plec's show that came out around the same time, where do you guys
the
remember what
people?
That was? Yeah, The Tomorrow People. I thought it was her show. So like, I was like, oh, well, I was covering The Vampire Diaries at the time. So I was like, oh, I'll keep up with Julie Plec. And then I started watching it. And I was like, halfway through, I was like, well, this is Tomorrow, but I'm pretty sure something is wrong. But then I kept watching it. And I think like most people, like the pilot of The 100 definitely isn't indicative of the quality of the rest of the show. But I was very intrigued. I was very intrigued with Clark. I liked her immediately. And there were some rough edges, but I'm used to not judging shows. I mean, I'm a Buffy fan, guys. I'm used to not judging shows for their necessarily perfection, but for their heart. And The 100 had a lot of heart right from the beginning, and I kept watching it. And it's one of the only shows that has kept my interest sort of right from the very beginning. I haven't had to force myself to watch it until I cared. And I was watching, I was like, oh, this is pretty good. This is pretty good. And then we got to around the episode where Charlotte kills Wells. That's like episode 2 or 3, so it's not that far into it. And I was like, oh my god, this show is amazing. And I haven't come down from that plane since then. It's pretty much sums it up. So I loved it. And every time something new happened, I was like blown. I was like, how is this show doing that? I thought it was, you know, judging it from the pilot, it just kept getting better and better and better in the season one finale. And I was like blown away. And then I told Andrew on Hypeable, I was like, we should cover the show. And he was like, no way, no one's gonna care, like no one watches the show. And I was like, okay, fine, whatever you say. And then I just started writing articles about it anyway. And that's a common theme. And then people started responding to it, and we got a lot of feedback. So now I'm covering it regularly, and I enjoy writing my weekly recaps, and it helps put things into perspective and helps to sort of deconstruct some of the very emotionally draining things that happen on that show, as we'll get into when we start talking about the season 3 premiere. So,
by the way, I'm so glad I'm not the only one that just like starts covering things without really asking permission. Like, yeah, I'm just gonna do this.
It's like the way to do it, isn't it? Because he's like, no, I don't think we need any more fandoms. I haven't really seen any buzz about it. And then you have to like prove that actually there's a fan base that cares. And the 100 fan base is amazing. It's like one of my favorite fan. I love all the fandoms, but that's like my favorite one. Don't tell anyone else. And the writers are so engaged. Like, they're engaging with fandom in such a spectacular way. I love everything about this show. So speaking about things we love, let's get into the season 3 premiere special, of course. The episode Wanhida Part 1 aired on Thursday, January 21st, ending a very, very, very long hiatus. And in my opinion, it did not disappoint. I am assuming, Karen and Kristen, that you guys agree.
Yeah, I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, same. Because at the end of season 2, I was very angry at some people. And I haven't had as much time to kind of deal with that as people who have been watching live. And so coming into this, I was like, am I just going to be really frustrated? And then I wasn't. And I quite enjoyed it. So I think I'm getting off to the right start for season 3, which I'm really happy about.
Was that Lexa that you were not happy with?
Yes, because I really like Lexa, and then she did a bad thing, and I was mad at her, and I was mad at Clark, and I was, you know what? I'm still mad.
I'm so glad you said that and that you're mad, because this is one of the like most uncomfortable things that's ever happened to me in fandom, is that I'm derailing again, but I wrote my season 2 finale recap right after I seen the episode. My mind was just, oh my god, Lexa, how dare you? It was a part 1 where she did the whole betrayal thing, and I was like, I just don't understand, like, how could Lexa do this? This is awful, like, poor Clark, blah blah blah. And then I get this like tweet from the showrunner from Jason Rothenberg, and he's like, I just want to point out that Lexa blah 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 blah. And I was like, oh my god, and my face just got bright red. And then I went in and I edited my recap. So that's like the one and only time I've ever been told off by an official person, but I quite enjoyed it. So I don't know. I'm trying not to let that affect my recaps, to make them less than honest, because I'm afraid that they'll yell at me again. But anyway, so Kyle, you're not afraid of being honest, so I will ask you what you thought about the season 3 finale premiere.
You keep mixing up.
I do.
No, I mean, I really liked it. I thought it was a really good premiere, and I thought it was a really great reintroduction, and I liked the time jump with the 3 months that have passed. Mm-hmm. But like that said, like, I feel like the season 1 finale into the season 2 premiere was a bigger like shock factor for me, and it was a bigger like, what? Like, at the end of season 2, I wasn't really like holding on to my seat, like wondering like what happened. Like, I mean, I was like shocked and disgusted by some people's decisions in the show. And I was like, ugh. But I wasn't like, okay, I really need season 3 like right now. But maybe that's what happens when you just binge watch everything, and like you're also like working while you binge watch. So you're not like giving it 100% of your attention, but more like 80 or 90. And so like, I don't know, like I watched the premiere twice, because the first time I watched it I was working, and I was like, maybe like I do like it more than I actually think, and then I watched it again, and I was like, no, same opinion. Like,
I think the 100, I mean, as someone who loves the show, like, I would never say, it's kind of like when we're doing the Buffy rewatch, and I'm always like cringing whenever someone, like one of the newbies, says that they are like doing something else while they're watching it, because I'm like, but you miss all these things that make it great. Like, you're not getting the full experience. And I think the 100 is definitely one of the ones that you need to pay attention, not just to what they're saying, but how they, but like the look on their face and how the people in the background are reacting, and like the tone of the scene and the mood and everything. But if you didn't like it the second time around, then I mean, that wasn't the problem in this case.
Yeah, and it was really funny, because the second time I took my Ciro out to the living room, and I was like, I'm gonna sit down and like watch
serious
this.
business.
Oh yeah. And and I found myself walking away from it a lot because I was like, I am not interested. Like,
yeah, but then you need to keep watching, force yourself. Love my show, goddamn.
No, I mean, like, I really, really like this show a lot. Like, don't take this as yeah. like I dislike the show, but like, I just wasn't blown away. Right. There wasn't anything about this premiere that made me go, what?
Yeah, and that's actually a good point, and we'll get into the specifics of that because I think that's one of the things that I loved about this episode is that it was kind of chill. Like, we did get some huge reveals, but a lot of it was spent catching us up in the past 3 months. And I enjoyed that immensely. I understand why some people wouldn't, but I particularly enjoyed the slower pace. I enjoyed getting to see some of the characters relax, because I believe that's the first time in, like, 2.5 seasons we've actually seen them smile, some of these people.
yeah.
And go to sleep and just have, like... Oh, that awesome car scene, guys. It was just, I really, really enjoyed seeing that. But that kind of leads us into our first discussion point, which is the 3 month time jump, setting up, allowing the characters to get to a different place without us having to see it. You know, getting to see Bellamy with a new girlfriend and getting to see Clark in the wild, having been in a wild for a long time, getting to see Raven and Octavia and Lincoln and Jasper and Lanti in peace times, having processed a lot of that initial, because the 100 is so intense, it's so immediate all the time. So this was like a sharp contrast to that. Did you enjoy that?
Yeah. I mean, we've been watching them since the moment they touched down on the ground 2 seasons ago, mm-hmm. and they've been in this constant battle just to stay alive because they've had, you know, two different, very drastically different enemies, like, coming down on them. And so now that some sort of peace has been found and they've had time to just be humans again, like, take a shower and, like, breathe and not have to worry about who's coming around the next corner. Like, it was so nice to see that they've settled down a little bit. Like, Raven didn't seem quite as, like, at the end of her rope. Like, most of the time she feels like she's trying so hard, you know, and Bellamy just getting to kind of settle into a little bit of a leadership role that he's always kind of had, but he seemed so much mellower about it. Like, he was kind of centered about it, which just, it's so nice. And yeah, I loved that we got to kind of settle in with them. Like, it was less of a, we must do this, we have to keep going. And it was a, all right, here's our normal routine. Here's what we do on a daily basis now. Like, and that was really refreshing and fun for me.
Yeah, definitely. And brings us to another point, which is Bellamy and his new girlfriend. And now what's interesting about this particular panel is that I believe we have at least one Bellark shipper and at least one Clexa shipper and at least one person who hates Bellamy. And I'll let you guess which one that is. And at least one person who really likes Bellamy but doesn't necessarily have a particular shipping preference. So what do we feel about the fact that Bellamy has a new girlfriend, a steady relationship?
Eh.
Huh? I liked her so much. I don't know. I don't know. I really liked her.
Me too.
Good.
I was going to say, as the resident Bellark shipper, yes. Hi everyone. Yes, it's me. I was actually really happy about this. Mm-hmm. I think he needs someone completely removed from all the crazy that has gone on, and he needs to kind of just settle in again, like, and calm down. And she seems like a really, you know, normal chick, and I'm interested to see what their relationship is and, like, how it came to be and all of that, which I'm sure we'll get more of. And so, yeah, I like Gina. I'm cool mm-hmm. with her, and we'll see where it goes from there. I'm all about the slow build, and it's been a really good ride so far, so I'm not freaking out.
Good. Yeah, that's good.
When this was airing, I sort of looked out of the corner of my eye at Kristen. She just kind of looked at me and she was like, it's fine.
I'm okay.
You, like, what does this mean? But I'm actually on the same page. Like, okay, yes, hi, I'm the Clexa shipper. And I should say that I do not watch this show, like, with
for the shipping
goggles on. Yeah.
Neither do I. Yeah.
But it's just like, I like some of the relationships more than others. I actually also really, really like Bellark. But I completely agree with Kristen. I think Bellamy needs somebody stable right now. And she seems very stable. And also, the best thing about her is, like, she seems to fit in with the gang really easily. She's a little sassy, but she seems kind-hearted and funny. And I just feel like this is somebody that would definitely catch Bellamy's attention, and it's nice to see just something normal and uncomplicated in the first episode back. So it was a breath of fresh air for me.
Yeah, I just hope they keep her around, because it feels like, you know, like with Maya, like we were like, she's super nice, but I mean, she's definitely gonna die. And that happened. So I'm just hoping that she gets to stick around for a bit, because yeah, she's super cool. She seems a little bit older, a little bit more settled, a little bit, you know, just something different. But so I'm assuming there are no massive Raven Wick shippers on the podcast. If they are, I'm so sorry to break this news to you, but they are done. He is gone.
I was so sad. I really liked just Wick as a character.
Me too.
And I'm sad that we don't get to know more about him.
Yeah.
I'm just really, really hoping he comes back. Like, I realize that that's sort of like outside the actual, like, what's happening on the show. It's the actor and stuff. But I liked him so much, and they were so cute together and good for each other, and I am actually really upset about this.
Right.
Yeah, I shipped him hardcore, and I was really upset.
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
He's also, like, my, like, he was my favorite hot guy of the show, so I'm really sad.
Yeah, but, and as well, like, Wick is gone, we don't think the actor's coming back. Raven is in a very bad place, and it's actually, I was going to mention this to you, Karis, and I forget which one of you wrote that article about Jasper.
I think that's our ship name. Like,
Kerristen. Oh, that's weird.
It was me. I wrote Jasper.
Yeah. Because I was going to mention it, that, yeah, Jasper's had a rough time, but Raven has had the worst time of any character on television ever, I think. And we found out this episode she's been hiding hip pain for the past 3 months, and she's clearly struggling a lot. And I'm really worried about Raven.
Yeah. Raven. I mean, we saw her and Wick in the midst of this crazy explosion, and then we didn't really get a whole lot of the aftermath of it. Like, we saw them post-explosion, and then we saw him carrying her back to Camp Jaha. Mm-hmm. And that was pretty much it. We didn't see exactly what had really happened to them in the explosion. Like, that's not a minor thing. So I kind of, like, wondered when we saw the clip before the season 3 premiere of her and Abby talking about, like, a surgery or something, and it was like, what exactly does this mean? So I was prepared to worry a little bit about Raven's health, and with, you know, complications from the bullet wound from season 2 and, you know, her losing the feeling in her, I believe it's her left leg. Like, that's always going to be a thing. Like, there's always a possibility of complications from that. So I'm definitely worried.
Yeah, same. And moving on to another couple. No, this is the worst transition ever. Let me try to make a better one.
Well, Raven's health might not be so great. Lincoln looks fantastic.
Perfect. Let's go with that one.
I mean, yes. When we see one of the first scenes we get is Lincoln and Bellamy, like, going, like, at it shirtless.
Fighting. Like, I was like,
and I think it was Jason Rothenberg who tweeted, "In our show, the loser has to put his shirt on," and I laughed hysterically because it's so fabulous and true. And, yeah.
But so Lincoln is looking good in his new Arcadia uniform, because he's now officially a member of the Arc people. I guess we can call them Arcadians now, which I appreciate, because I've been looking for a name for them for a long time for my recaps. So thanks for that, guys. And Octavia, on the other hand, is having a really hard time. She's clearly not made for peace. She is riding around on her horse. She is sleeping on the ground. She's very confined, because they're not really allowed to leave Arcadia because they're trying to keep the ceasefire. It's almost like Lincoln and Octavia have switched places, because she wants to be tree crew and he wants peace. What did you guys think about their new dynamic? Do you enjoy the way that this pair has been developing? The show's like one definitely canon couple?
I mean, it always, like, is a little frustrating for me because I want them to be together so badly, but there needs to be complications and there needs to be conflict. So I think that this, you know, perfectly falls in line with their personalities because from the beginning, Octavia has been a little bit of a rebel and very quickly started really picking up on Grounder culture and fighting to become one of them. On the other hand, Lincoln has tried so hard to protect Octavia specifically, but also the Sky People in many instances, and has felt like an outsider to the Grounders. So the fact that they just keep going in those directions makes perfect sense to me. But I think, I don't know, maybe it's because I'm like, yes, we need some peace. I feel like Lincoln just has a better point in that, you know, they have to learn to survive, and he's not necessarily turning his back on his culture as much as he is just trying to adapt to the situation. And you would think that Octavia would appreciate that and that he'd be willing to work to kind of understand her people and everything. But at the same time, I can also understand why Octavia is like, this is not who we are. And yeah. And just kind of wants to go off and be who she thinks they are.
Yeah.
You have to keep in mind that these are the people that locked Octavia up for her entire life. Like, she was locked in her family's living space forever in the floorboards. And then when she was finally got a chance to see outside of it, they locked her up in the skybox. So her being on the ground is like the first time she's gotten a chance to live. So now that the Sky People are here and have like laid down the law, and she has found some people who allow her to truly just live and be her, you can see why she likes Tree Crew so much. Like, she's not Octavia Bellamy's sister who was illegally born. She's Octavia of Tree Crew. Like, she's a totally different person. So you can kind of see why she doesn't just want to go back to being, you know, Octavia Blake.
Right. And that's the interesting thing about Octavia and Lincoln that I think is so special about their relationship compared to other relationships on TV, is that Octavia is very clearly like a wild child, obviously. She's a very independent spirit. She's very self-sufficient. She's very strong-willed. And she wants to be alone, but she wants to be alone with Lincoln. Like, she's so attached to this person, but it doesn't in any way affect how she is as an individual. And she goes off on her own, and she kicks ass, and she does all these things, not for Lincoln, but just for her own development. But then she always has this tie to him. And in season three, I think it's going to be really interesting to see how their relationship develops, because it's almost like everything would tell these people logically they shouldn't be together. Like, Lincoln should be doing his peace thing, Octavia should be doing her Grounder thing, but then they are, like, you know, Jason Rothenberg calls them like soulmates. They are drawn together in this inexplicable way that does that they have to be together, and that sort of further complicates their arcs. And I'm very much looking forward to seeing how that's going to develop this year. So any other thoughts about what's happening at Arcadia before we move on to our new dream team on the road? On the Fury Road.
Yeah, I have to say that parts of the new Arcadia camp look so much like Mount Weather now that they've moved in some of the stuff from Mount Weather, that it's so, like, jarring. I in that clip with Shawn Mendes that they put out before the premiere, I really thought they were at Mount Weather. Like, yeah. It looked like Mount Weather, but it's not. That was definitely at the Arcadia camp. So it might be, you know, it hard to remember where you are when you start seeing so many familiar things from last season. But they are definitely at Arcadia, yeah, not Mount Weather.
Yeah. I was going to say with, like, musical, I think I made this joke before. I recycle my own jokes. But when Shawn Mendes started playing and they were all, like, Gina was playing bartender. And I was like, this is just the Bronze all over again. Like, they're turning this into Buffy. And they're going to have new musical guests every week. next week, Evanescence. I thought that was a really funny scene. I think a lot of fans had a hard time taking that seriously with the live pop star performance, but I thought actually the song fit the mood really well, and I very much enjoyed seeing Jasper tackle him and punch him in the face, because it's almost like reminding me, oh yeah, it's the 100.
Nothing is that simple.
Yeah.
You know what, though? With Raven being like, yeah, I caught you doing this, you know, what's the payment? One song. And I feel like for them, the fact that they can even focus on music at this point, just like with the road trip, it's so telling of their state of mind. And they've been deprived of these little happy moments for so long that having him perform something just feels like such a treat. And I mean, to be completely honest, I didn't know like this was a thing as I was watching it. Like, I didn't know who this kid was or anything like that. But to me, it just felt really seamless with the story. So I didn't pick up on anything.
And speaking of music, nice transition there. The best part of the episode, I mean, no matter, I just this was amazing. So Bellamy has his squad of people we already know. It seems like he is, it's a pretty set group of people that go out on scouting missions together, and it is Octavia on her horse, Jasper, who we'll talk a little bit about later, Raven as designated driver, Monty and Miller. So they sit in the car, and the Violent Femmes added up is playing. One of the writers, it may have been Shauna Benson, I'm not 100% sure, said that that was like the perfect way to sum up the show, Violent Femmes. I like that. So that is playing. Everyone's singing along. It was so precious. I died.
It's just like, I love how Monty is just so anti this music until everybody starts getting into it. And then he's like, all right, fine. This is fun. Fine. I'll admit it. Like, when Jasper first unplugged, like, he was like pissy, and I'm like, come on, kid, like, just relax. And then Raven kind of gets into it, and then Miller and Bellamy are, and you know, it's, I love watching them kind of unwind. Like, it's, they're kids, they still are like teenagers, so them rocking out to a song while driving across the, you know, plains of the ground, like, it's just nice to see.
And Octavia on a horse next to the and Raven just having such a good time, like, all of it was just perfect.
It was really nice to see Jasper like happy and like singing along instead of like the way he was the rest of the episode. Like, the rest of the episode he was just being like really moody and really depressed and like like really scary, and so like it was just really nice to see him kind of like lift up for like a couple minutes.
Definitely. So their sort of moment of joy is interrupted when they get a signal from the car, and they learn that the tracking device from the farm station is active. And the farm station, of course, is one of the pieces of the arc that broke off when they fell to the ground. And I think so far, like, quite a few pieces of arc fell to the ground, but we only know about two of them, I believe. We know about the Arcadia Camp Jaha station, and then we know about another one, which, like, everyone died who was on it. So the fact that the farm station might still be out there is pretty big news. And, of course, we learn in this episode that not only are Monty's family on this farm station, but so is Miller's ... boyfriend, which was a small little reveal. It was very nice. You know, there's been a lot of fan speculation about Miller, and the fact that there's another non-straight person confirmed on the show is pretty nice. Guys, I'm so sad it's not Monty.
Maybe they have a secret romance.
Maybe they do. I've seen some theories. I've been trolling Tumblr trying to settle my feelings, because I just said earlier that I don't really care much about the shipping on the show, but this is the exception. Like, Minty all the way. I don't know why. I just really like it. And, like, learning that Miller has a boyfriend and it's not Monty, almost like, but why?
Well, the other thing was, I wasn't sure if it was a current boyfriend of Miller's or whether...
Right, Bellamy, or if it was someone on...
present. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, Bellamy used present tense. He said, like, Miller's boyfriend, like, currently his boyfriend.
Right.
But they've only been on the ground for, like, a total of, what, 6 months?
I think so, 4 months, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, it could be a boyfriend from the Ark, and Bellamy was referring to him as, like, still alive, like, was trying to give Miller hope. So I wasn't sure exactly what they meant there.
But yeah, so, I mean, I'm assuming that Miller's boyfriend, like Monty's family, were on the farm station at the time it crashed. So if the farm station people are still out there, which I assume they're going to be, because otherwise, like, we would have known, I feel like. They wouldn't set it up if it's not going to pay off in some way. Then Miller's boyfriend from 4 months ago would still be alive, or we'll find out that he's dead, which would be super sad. But it sets up an interesting dynamic. And honestly, I mean, shipper feelings aside, I'm really excited both that Monty and Miller are getting more screen time, it seems, this season, because I enjoy both of them a lot, especially Monty. He's one of my favorites. So I enjoyed this development, even though it broke my little shipper heart.
I am definitely pro Monty getting more camera time. I love seeing him as Bellamy's like right hand man. Right. So I'm all about that.
Yeah. And speaking of course, people that breaks your heart, Jasper. Let's talk a little bit about Jasper. He is he's very sad. He's drinking a lot. He's very depressed about Maya's death and the role that Monty played in getting all the people at Mount Weather killed. He said something like, I guess, you know, that's what happens when you help melt your friend's girlfriend or something like that, which was both funny and super sad. Like, he's very, very, very upset at Monty, who's just trying to take care of his friend. And when they encounter the grounders who are carrying the tracker around, Jasper basically walks under that guy's knife. Like, he has a death wish. It's very sad.
Oh, disgust. Jasper.
I don't like this Jasper.
No? No. But don't you think it makes sense?
No.
You don't?
Oh. No.
Are you kidding?
Why not? What is it going to take?
Right? It makes sense to a certain extent. And everything made sense up until the point where he was getting his throat literally slit and he was like smiling about it. Like that, like, it, I don't know. Like, I would have hoped that him actually almost getting killed, like to the point where it was cutting his skin, would have like woken him up or something. I totally understand why he like has a death wish and why like he's so like morbid and that why he's just like drunk all the time and he's just freaking out. But like, I don't know. I you would have thought that him actually almost dying, literally almost dying, would have like woken up and he would have been like, "What am I doing?"
Like, I don't know though, to be honest. Like, looking at, I mean, I'm sure Kristen can talk about this more too in depth because I know you're a big fan of him. But looking at what he's been through so far, looking at how desperate he was already at Mount Weather, how like look at Finn in season two. I kind of liken it to what happened to Finn, is that he reached his breaking point and he was done. Like, he just, it was too much. Like, all the things they've gone through. Like, some people under those circumstances, they break. You know, clearly we're dealing with some very, very strong-minded, strong-willed people, like Clark, especially, Bellamy, Octavia. But someone like Jasper, looking at who he is and looking at what he's been through, I think he's broken. And I think he was in that point ready to die, and he was ready to watch people who loved him, watch him die, because that's what he had to do himself. You know, he had to watch Maya die, and now he's looking at Monty and at Bellamy and all those people that helped make that happen. He's saying, look, what this is what it's like. You know, that's how I interpreted it.
Yeah. Jasper, poor Jasper, is so broken. And the deciding factor for me as to why I think Jasper's story has been tougher than anyone else's, I know a lot of people disagree, and that's totally fine. But as opposed to Finn and Bellamy and Raven and Clark, Jasper has had like zero control over what has happened to him. Mm. Clark has made a lot of decisions that have actively gotten her put in positions of power and has actively made choices that caused her life to be harder. But she had the choice. She made the decision. Whereas Jasper, he walks onto the ground, a spear thrown through him, and then he gets taken hostage by Murphy out of nowhere, and then he's in Mount Weather and he finally thinks everything's going his way and it's, you know, these people are nice and he gets to eat pie, and then like his whole world gets flipped upside down again because these people want to kill him and all of his friends, and so he tries so hard to save them all, and then, you know, Clark steps in and saves the day by killing everyone, including the girl he loves. Like, poor Jasper has no control. And I think this is Jasper, A, embracing the no control, like, fine. If I'm not going to be able to do anything and stop anything from happening, then I'm going to get drunk every night and be out of control. And then B, saying what control I do have is over my life. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to do with it what I want. And so him stepping up and taking the beacon and going under the knife was, yeah, I agree with you, Selena. Him saying, this is my life and mm-hmm. I don't care anymore. Like, I'm going to show you what you all have done to me. Like, I'll even throw myself in this situation. Like, I want you to see what you've done.
Yeah.
And I just, that's why for me, Jasper, just, I have so many, like, I feel so badly for him more so than anybody else because the poor guy just can't get a break.
Yeah, you're right. And that's going to be very interesting going forward too, because I have a feeling it's going to get a lot worse for Jasper before it gets better, if it ever gets better. I'm worried about Jasper this season, definitely, but I'm also worried about the people around him, because if he's willing to be that the gruesome and callous with his own life, I don't know. I'm worried. I'm really worried. I don't want to, like, accuse Jasper of something he hasn't done yet, but I am worried about the implications of the state of mind that he's in right now, especially for people closest to him, like Monty and Bellamy and Clark when she comes back.
Yeah. Well, I think that we kind of can blame him for some of the stuff that's happened in the first episode, because if he hadn't been so reckless, they wouldn't have had to fight those grounders. And yeah. I think part of it is kind of out of his control because he is broken. He's kind of crazy right now with that heartbreak. And it's very frustrating to watch because it's not the Jasper that I fell in love with, but I also think it's exactly where his character is right now. But if he's not careful, he's going to be the one who's going to end up getting people hurt. And he's going to have to live with that. Mm-hmm. And I think it's already started happening because they could have as easily lost that fight with the grounders as won it. And they were just lucky in that moment that they were prepared, you know, for that battle.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And in that battle, of course, Octavia kills a grounder. Now, it's a grounder from Ice Nation. But the fact that she's killed a grounder when they know that would end the ceasefire kind of leads me to wonder if the ceasefire is over now. Like, are they at war with Ice Nation now, officially?
That's, I think, a question they left lingering for episode two. Bellamy tries to broach the subject with Kane, and Kane's like, we've got other things to worry about, we'll deal with that later.
Right.
So I think when we come back for episode two, we're going to find out whether or not, like, ceasefire's done, we're open war now, or whether somehow they'll be able to patch this up and find a way to make peace with Ice Nation. I don't mm-hmm. know.
Yeah. And, of course, speaking of Kane, he kind of left... Him and Abby have grown closer, definitely, as we've seen in this episode. But without telling Abby, he went off to meet with Indra because Indra had news of Clark. Bellamy and Monty, they sort of leave the others to go back to camp without them. And head off to meet Kane and Indra, who have received news of Clark, who we're, of course, going to speak about in a little bit, and they get into an ambush. And that's kind of where we leave those four characters, which is worrying the Monty fangirl in me a lot. I'm trying to stay calm. I'm totally spoiler-free, by the way, as I'm sure you guys are as well. I try to keep away from spoilers, so whatever we like say in this episode obviously has no like bearing on what's going to happen. It's probably the exact opposite of what we say is actually going to happen. That's how my recaps usually go. But yeah, so Clark is, we learn in this episode, is now a redhead. She's on the run from all the grounders because, as Indra explains to Kane, she is Wanhida, which is a grounder word. David J. Peterson is a genius, and he's constructed this whole, of course, Trigger Dathling language. And Wanhida, which means, like, death leader, like the commander of death, is basically a commander that has been responsible for the deaths of a lot of people, and therefore there's a superstition among the grounders that if someone kills the Wanhida, they absorb her power and sort of become the master of death. The Ice Nation's queen really wants that power, so everyone is out for Clark's blood. Clark, meanwhile, is wrestling panthers in the forest, because of course she is. What an introduction. Well, first of all, what an introduction to her character this episode. I loved it so much. And it was a real panther, apparently.
Yeah, I read that too. Like, Eliza had said, like, there was a real panther on set and it was awesome and really pretty. And I'm like, yeah, that's totally cool.
And how like Clark, because we know actually this is canon that panther meat doesn't taste very good, but how like Clark, we think she's killing the rabbit and then she's using it to catch a predator, which is just, it says a lot about her character too, I think, that that's who she goes for. She could have gotten a two-headed deer, but no.
Yeah, she's not happy with, you know, a day's worth of rabbit meat. She'd rather catch the big cat like eat for, you know, a week or something like that.
And she brings this big cat to a trading post where we learn that how she survives. Basically, she's trading it for meat that's already been prepared, which is brilliant. Like, I don't know. This blew my mind. Because, like, why would she not just, like, cook it herself or, like, just eat it raw or, like, eat plants? Like, I never would have figured this out if I was Clark. I was very impressed.
Well, she wants to visit the cute girl in the shop.
That's true as well. You think it's all just, like, a meet cute situation? Meet cute. Yeah.
I was confused for a second because I was like, what does that mean?
I didn't even realize. I'm so funny and I don't even realize.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
This should have been my recap title. Anyway, so this person, I can't move on. This person that she meets at the trading post is a new character called Nyla, who is in real life, she's actually the sister of, what's his name? Murphy. Actor Richard Harmon. You can kind of see the resemblance. That was cool. And we sort of see her, Nyla, as kind of helping her, maybe, maybe not, we can discuss, escape the Ice Nation warriors that come searching for her. And they sort of have a little chat. Nyla reveals that she's wearing a wristband from the Ark, which I thought, I was so sure for a second she was a one of the 100 that had, like, we thought she had died, but she had escaped and, like, assimilated with the Grounders. And I thought that would have been so cool. So I was a little bit disappointed that wasn't the case. But it does lead me to wonder if there are people out there like that. But, so they have a romantic entanglement, which all the Clexa fans are super annoyed by. Because it's kind of the same as the Minty situation. Like, they're like, oh, well, you wanted bisexual Clark, but you're not going to get your ship, you know? But the interesting thing about this particular hookup, too, is that I read an interview with Jason Rothenberg. I believe it was the Hollywood Reporter who spoke to him about Clark's romantic fling with Nyla and said, at this point, he wants to establish to the audience that Clark is bisexual, though Lexa wasn't just like a one-off and that it wasn't like an intimidation thing, that kiss that they shared. So he said it could just as well have been like a cute guy grounder, but it was a girl, just so they could make that clear. And I thought that was a nice thing, you know, to just establish that for sure. It was nice. She's nice. I hope she doesn't die or turns out to be evil.
Yeah, same.
Do you have any thoughts on that, Kyle? Anyone? Like, yeah. Was it weird? Was it out of context?
I don't like Clark.
You don't, no, what?
I'm totally joking.
Oh my god. I was about to be like, Kyle,
you've been fired. Get out. Go.
Oh my god.
Do I have the power to fire him? No.
No, it's, I really liked the whole, like, the entire Clark arc.
Clark. That was good too.
Because she's one of my favorite, if not my favorite character. And so it was really nice to see her not grow. I mean, is grow the right word? If she's, like, stranded on her own, but she's been able to make it this far, it's, like, really nice being able to see her, like, handle it all. Mm-hmm. And, like, she's not scared. Or, like, she might be scared, but, like, that's not the first thing we see. Like, we see her just working it out. And I really, really like that about her. And I'm also a really big fan of Nyla and her together. Mm-hmm. Because it confirms that, like, Clexa is possible. So that's why I'm, like, all right, that's fine. You do you. You have that fling with that shock girl.
Are you team Clexa?
Yes.
Okay.
Do you think I'm team Bellamy? No.
Oh, of course. Of course. Anyone but Bellamy, basically.
Anyone but Bellamy, really. Yeah.
My gosh.
No, yeah. I really like this entire arc. It was really great.
honestly, like, that's the cool thing is they do such a good job of making all of these ships feel so good. Like, I like everything.
Yeah.
Like, I like Valark. I like Clexa. I like her with this new girl. I liked her with Finn. I like her on her own because, yes, you know, women don't need a relationship to feel like, you know, they're fulfilled in life. And they do such a good job of keeping it all like part of the story and also very subtle, because when Clexa happened, that kiss that they shared, you know, going back to what you said about them wanting to establish that, yes, Clark is bisexual, I was a little confused. I was like, does she, like, is she into this? Is she into this because it's Lexa, despite the fact, like, despite gender or anything? Is she actually into women? We really didn't know at that point. And this sort of solves that mystery, but adds, it adds more to Clark's character.
Yeah.
So it's not just a hookup to show, like, you know, gratuitous sex on screen. It's, it actually establishes more about her as a person. And they seamlessly do that time and time again. And the relationships are so well done on this show that even though I don't look at it through shipper goggles, it just, it always works and it always makes me invested anyway.
And you know what I think it is, too? I mean, not necessarily spend so much time on this, although shipping, of course, is a huge part of fandom. Because I'm the same as you. I really don't... it's not that I don't care. It's that I care about all of them, like you. Like, I like the almost every single character in the show I like. And almost every single character in the show, I feel like their development is so organic. And I think I'm just along for the ride, and I trust that these characters will get to where they need to be when they're ready to be there. And that goes for relationships, too. And I think, speaking about Clark specifically, and Lexa and Bellamy, I'm not worried that one negates the other, because I feel like the writers are, unlike unlike a lot of other television shows, I gotta be honest, like, this is one of the reasons The 100 is my favorite show, one of my favorite shows of all time, is because the characters are so real that it's not like they are saying, well, okay, we're gonna say, okay, let's take a poll in the writer's room, you know, Clexa or Belarc, okay, Belarc wins by two, that's what we're gonna force the character towards. They're saying, well, at that's this point in time, Bellamy's doing this, Clark is doing this, Lexa's doing this, Jasper's doing this, Miller and Monty are doing this, and wherever their development naturally takes them is where their relationships are gonna go. So it's like, character dictates all of these things. So right now, Clark is not physically near Lexa or Bellamy, so it's a non-issue. Clexa doesn't negate that Belarc might happen in the future and vice versa. The only thing that negates anything is if they kill one of them off, Finn. So, but I like it. I like it a lot. And it's one of the reasons I'm not stressed about shipping, and I'm not particularly worried that they're not going to do either of them a disservice, because if it's right for the story, I feel like it's gonna happen.
Exactly. Like, that's the difference between this show, is like, the ships are like a bonus. It's the relationships that are,
you know?
Right, like, they're built because of what happens. Mm-hmm. It's not, we must get to the point where Clark and Lexa are ready to be together. No. They're both fighting for their lives, and amidst that, they have a connection. So
there are
a lot of other things
going on besides romance. You know, there's a lot to fill their lives besides from romance. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. So it all just feels organic. Like, it feels real. It just happens. And so that's, yeah, I agree. I'm the same way.
Yeah. So Clark, sort of towards the end of the episode, I mean, she wakes up from a nightmare, which kind of proves that she's clearly very, very damaged and upset about what happened in Mount Weather. And at the end of the episode, she is captured by that guy from Vikings. Or at least the guy that looks like that guy from Vikings. I don't know. It's very strange.
He's from Black Sails,
I believe. Okay.
And his name is Zach McGowan.
Right.
And he's playing a grounder named Roan.
Glad that you knew that fact, because I did not.
I wrote that up about 6 months ago.
Okay.
But yeah, he looks intense.
Yeah, and that sort of does leave us to wonder, you know, did he just recognize Clark, or did Nyla sort of tip him off in some way? Like, I guess we'll have to wait and see. And Clark is captured, and we presume she's going to be taken to the Ice Queen. Exciting times. So unless you guys have something else to say about Clark, we're going to move on to the final thread of story in this episode. I'm excited. I'm ready for this. So Murphy and Jaha's timeline The episode actually opens with Murphy. I mean, as well, like, how great is the show? Like, the season 3 opener is Murphy. And it's so good. It's basically like a little montage of him like tripping out in the hatch that he's been stuck in for 3 months, and he pours wine over his head and he loses his mind and he watched his video over and over again, and we're gonna get into the specifics of that. But what did you guys think about the opening of the episode?
I hated Murphy right. mm-hmm. with a fiery passion for so long, and now I find his sarcasm strangely endearing.
Yes, same.
And he, especially because at this point my hatred has moved on to Jaha, who I detest with every fiber of my being, and the fact that Murphy is like the voice of reason,
yeah,
just
I know,
makes
it's
me
so
laugh
good.
So much, and I think that makes me enjoy his story even more. But that whole montage of him like slowly going crazy and the wine, I was like, oh my god, what is happening right now? It was really funny, but at the same time you knew he was going crazy because he was stuck in there, and it was kind of sad too.
Mm-hmm.
I really loved watching him try to bash the door down, and like he starts out just like using something you know, rather small, and then he loses his shirt and he's like using something a little heavier, and then he comes back with this ridiculous thing and is like, it's just, yeah, I loved it. Again, I hated Murphy, we all did at one point, and so now it's so interesting to be like, okay, he's now the sane one, what the heck is happening here? Like, seriously.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about Murphy at this point, because
just give in to the love. Just
when
love
season
him.
Two ended, I still hated him. I could have sworn, Selena, at some point you were like, "Oh, you'll change your mind," and like I was like, "Okay."
That's because everyone
and
changes their mind. I think
I was
you're just
waiting
being
to
stubborn.
Change my mind, and I still like this premiere as an exception. I still hated his guts so much. I like couldn't stand him at all. So Murphy and Jaha together for me, I was like,
Kyle, can I ask you, who do you like?
Okay, I like Jasper. I like Clark.
mm-hmm. I'm waiting.
Miller.
Like, yes. Rick.
And
okay.
Monty. I like Monty.
Yeah,
like
me
Monty.
Too.
I like
good.
A lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but like, I don't know. There's something about Murphy that like...
You look a lot like Jasper. I only just realized this.
Do I really?
I think so, yeah.
Okay. I mean, I feel like I connect with Jasper. I don't know why, but I feel like if I was any character on this show, it would be Jasper.
As we would probably all be Jasper, like running yeah. around being terrified of everything.
And just, yeah.
Yeah.
This episode was literally the first episode in which I did not hate Murphy.
Well,
so,
that is progress. What I love about Murphy is the fact that I hated him so much for such a long time. And I think a lot of the fandom feel this way. Like, Murphy has just become, like, your super problematic fave of the fandom because he was such a horrible, terrible, terrible, evil person. Like, he was. But the point of the 100 is that no one is ever one thing. Like, everyone changes, everyone grows, everyone evolves in some way. And the people that started off being heroes, they do bad things. The people that start off being, yeah, exactly, Finn, even Clark, even, you know, the people that start off being villains, they do good things, and you have to reevaluate how you feel about them. And Murphy, it's not like you forget everything horrible that he's done, but compared to all the people that are worse, Murphy is suddenly the lesser of a lot of evils. And I think in a way, like, I'm not sure this was intentional, but putting him with Jaha, who for a lot of people is such a downer, and whose storyline is in a lot of ways very removed from everything else, like, that just elevated Murphy's character, because he, as you said, like, he got to be the voice of reason, where before he was the one who's going to try to kill everyone. He's going to the one who shot Raven.
Yeah,
and
see,
now
I don't see how any of his, like, none of his previous actions are forgivable for
but
me.
But that's
which is
the
why
point. That's
like
the
him.
Point. Like, you don't have to forgive him. But that's what I love, is that he's a horrible person and I love him anyway. It's like, I don't know. This is a bad comparison, but like Damon on The Vampire Diaries. Like,
was,
it's not like he's a good
that.
Person, but he's hilarious and he's sarcastic and he's, you know, he brings some lightness, you know?
But like Damon has like, I feel like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like Damon has more depth to him than
Murphy. He's also a main character, whereas Murphy is a second. But yeah, I mean, you're right. You're right, definitely. But I don't think Murphy needs depth. I think he just, I don't know. He did have a lot of depth in this episode, though. Go on.
Even Murphy knows, like, where to kind of draw a line. Mm-hmm. When Jaha chucked the guy into the lake, even Murphy...
He was like, okay, that's enough.
That's wrong. Even Murphy has a line where it's just a little too much. Yeah. So, yeah.
I think it was a really smart decision to pair him with Jaha. Because anyone who still dislikes Murphy is going to learn to dislike Jaha more. Exactly. And thereby... like Murphy in comparison.
Right, and which is what I feel like happened in season two for most people, but maybe it will happen now for you. But so before we start talking a little bit about Jaha, the video info, we get some important stuff that's just important to mention, is that Allie, the robot projection lady, the sexy female robot, who said that? We learned that her creator's name was Becca. She took her likeness from Becca without her permission. The year was 2051, which sort of makes it almost canon that the world ended in 2052, which is where Jasper got that Earth Day sweater or t-shirt in season one, which I only know because I just watched it a few days ago. And Allie's primary directive, we learned, was to make the world a better place, basically, to make humanity better. And she ended up pulling a total Dwight Schrute and decided that the world had too many people and that she needed to eliminate a lot of them, which was a nice bit of background information on her. I have a lot of WTF points now on the list, which then Murphy almost kills himself when he runs out of food after 3 months. Jaha sets him free. We learn he's been locking him up for his quote-unquote protection, WTF. Jaha is going to the City of Light in his mind, WTF. Jaha is totally in love with that female robot projection, WTF. Jaha has this random crippled bodyguard Igor archetype person running around, What the hell is going on?
Well, that reminded me of Octavia seeing the totally creepy radiation-affected guy in season two. And I remembered Rothenberg being asked about that at SDCC, and somebody asked him, I think it was at the panel, just if we would see more of that. And he said, yes, you will learn more about like the people that were affected physically by radiation exposure and like that sort of thing. So I think this guy might be a tie-in to that, but I like that he, even that little teeny bit of something that was Octavia and Lincoln like at the beginning of last season is now tied into the beginning of third.
True. Good point. Now I want to talk a little bit about Jaha visiting, because Jaha is mad. Jaha is crazy. Like, I am sort of... Last season, I hated... Like, I was like, you guys, I hated his storyline. I hated the vague sort of religious undertones I felt like it had. I was like, if they're going to pull a Battlestar Galactica and, like, retcon the whole show by saying, oh, God did it, I'm going to, like, throw something across the room. But at this point, I feel like that's not what's happening. And I am able to enjoy Jaha's storyline a lot more because he is so crazy. So basically, the whole point of his quest now seems to be he's converted the nuclear warhead into a power source, and he's going off with Murphy and Imori, who's back, by the way, yay. He's basically going to go to, quote-unquote, the City of Light, which he's apparently been visiting in his mind. He gives Murphy a little blue pill that he says can take him there. And when I was watching the episode, I was like, oh my God, it's drugs. Like, he's just crazy drug addict, crazy person, like Dumbo-style visions. He's also seeing Allie still, even though he's left the island behind. But we actually had a theory on hypeable.com, which I thought was so good. And if you guys like already thought this, then it's just me being an idiot. But I was just blown away by this. So this is also kind of a response to a listener question we got from The Ocean Heaves, who said, you know, they would love to hear the theory about the drugs. Is that how you enter the City of Light? This person called Stephen Miller said, I suspect that the City of Light that Jaha is talking about is a virtual world that Allie has somehow developed tech that allows her to connect to someone's brain directly to the computer she has running the virtual world program. So you swallow something and it travels through the bloodstream until it hits the brain and attaches to it. And that's how Jaha is still seeing Allie even now that they've left her mansion. Allie is able to use the implant in Jaha's brain to make him see, hear, and feel whatever she wants him to. So I guess if a bunch of people people had these implants, they could use their connection to Ally to live together in a virtual world, sort of like an MMO server that connects directly to your brain and controls all of your senses, which seems pretty creepy when you realize it would be completely controlled by an artificial intelligence who has wiped out most of the human race once already. Is your mind blown or what?
Yes.
This is totally what's happening.
So awesome.
I know. This is person has figured it out. Like, this is like Ready Player One meets Matrix meets like Dollhouse. This is amazing.
Yes. This is one of my favorite sci-fi tropes, mm-hmm. is that whole like virtual world type of thing. And oh my God, if the 100 turned into that, like, I'm so in.
It's like
I'm
Wall-E. Ready for it. But wouldn't this be amazing? Like, couldn't you just see this playing out? Like, Jasper obviously would subscribe to this immediately. He'd get to be like a white city of light junkie, you know, immediately. And like people from the Ark would like start subscribing to this. It would be like in season two, how the Reapers like craved that drug, and Jaha would like, I don't know. This would, oh my God, this is such an interesting theory.
Yeah, when I saw the thing, whatever it was, that Jaha tried to give Murphy and told him, like, you know, take this and shoved it in his pocket, it didn't look like a pill to me. And I was like, that doesn't look like drugs. That looks like something else. And I couldn't put my finger on what I thought it was. This explains exactly what I was, like, looking for but couldn't find.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is what's happening. I hope this is what's happening because it explains so much. It makes it all make a lot of sense. You can see why a lot of people who are used to living in space wouldn't want to even try to figure out how to live on the ground. Like, if they can escape to a virtual world, why wouldn't they? Like, I'm on board.
Exactly. And like, it fixes everything, like with Jaha. Like, okay, he's still crazy. Like, before he got to the island, he was still crazy about the City of Light thing. But it explains how it could be real, but not, you know what I mean? Like, it explains everything. I'm totally on board. Is anyone too blown away, or do you guys have any other thoughts? Does this make you more entertained by Jaha's storyline, or are you still just over it?
I definitely like the story. I hate Jaha, but I don't think that's really going to... Well, you know, honestly, maybe it will change because they do such a good job with that. But right now, he's just a fanatic, and I don't have time for that. I just don't care about him and his, like, Ally religion, so...
Did anyone else dislike Jaha from, like, the very beginning?
Yeah, but that's because he was so rude in the dropship when he was like, you're all sent to the ground and we don't, like, expect that you're gonna make it, but it's your own fault because you suck, and, like, Jaha out.
Yeah, he's supposed to be, like, that super righteous, I'm the big dog, I've got all the answers guy in season one, and I don't think you were supposed to like him. And he's just gotten to be a worse version of that as time's gone on.
I find it really interesting you say that, because I was actually gonna ask you, do you think the writers expect everyone to dislike Jaha? Because I feel like with all the other characters, I have a really strong sense of whether what I feel about a character aligns with what the writers are trying to make me feel about a character. But with Jaha, I can't tell. I can't, because he's so obnoxious. And like, I can't tell if that's the point. But it seems like most of the fans agree. Like, no, I don't think anyone likes Jaha. And I don't get it. I don't get if we're supposed to or not.
I'm glad that I'm not in the minority with the dislike for Jaha.
I mean, there were points in season one when I thought I liked Jaha, kind of, because he was, you know, he was willing to sacrifice himself with his people during the culling. And we just saw him go through a lot of stuff. And when he sacrificed himself on the Ark in season one finale, I was like, okay, you're forgiven. Like, I am absolving you of the things that you've done. You've earned my forgiveness. You're done. Goodbye, Jaha. I like you now. And then he didn't die. And I was like, but no, no.
That's exactly what happened to me, Selena, because kind of in the middle of his story, I was like, okay, this guy really does care about his people, and he's willing to do whatever it takes to make sure his people and humanity survive.
Yeah. And he wasn't cool mean like Cain was at that time, because Cain was like the villain of the Ark, right? So at first.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And even when he came back, he felt way more level-headed than he ever had before. And I was like, on board with that. And then he started going off the deep end. Mm. And I feel like right now you're not really supposed to like him. He's kind of insufferable. And I think when you pit that against Murphy, who I believe a lot of fans are probably still trying to get on board with, because, yeah, he's more likable now, but he's still an asshole.
But he's so funny. Like, do you think he doesn't need to not be an asshole for me to like him?
But I think pitting Jaha against Murphy, mm-hmm. who we don't like in the same way that we like Clark, kind of shows that Jaha is supposed to be the unlikable one in that duo. Like, he's definitely the antagonist. I think Murphy's trying to be a realist and is still trying to survive, whereas Jaha is looking for the impossible and putting himself and other people in danger to find it.
Yeah. Well, either way, I've decided that I'm not going to be annoyed by the fact that Jaha continues to exist on the show anymore. I'm ready for whatever they've got planned, especially if it's this, like, Ready Player One scenario. We'll have to see how that plays out. We got another couple of questions from listeners last minute when I announced that we were doing this sort of in the 11th hour, which Emmy Foss asks, or basically just has a comment saying, the fact that kick-ass bisexual women are now owning Thursday nights is incredible, hashtag the 100, hashtag Legends of Tomorrow, hashtag How to Get Away with Murder. Yeah, that is incredible. Now for the male representation as well. That is the next step in our checklist. I continue to chant Monty in my head silently.
We knew. We could
really
tell.
Crossing my fingers here. So, and our final comment kind of leads us into our wrap-up discussion point, which is, if from The Ocean Heaves, what/who are you most excited to see in the next episodes? So what are we excited about seeing in Juanita Part 2 and beyond? What do we think is going to happen?
I'm excited that Clark is getting her blonde hair back.
Okay.
Because the red just doesn't really work for me.
I think it's cool.
I think it's adorable.
It allowed me to make a lot of jokes about Clark dyeing her blood or her hair in the blood of her enemies. Yeah. So I was really happy about that.
But I will say that I'm also really excited about this Ice Queen because, mm-hmm. first of all, I love the fact that their ruler is a woman. That's always amazing.
Yeah, I'm excited for that too. And I know I'm pretty sure Lexa is going to be back this next week too. I'm excited to see her. And how about you, Kyle?
I'm really looking forward to Jasper's plot and his arc. I really want to see where it goes. I think out of all of the stories, all the character stories, his is the one I'm most interested in. Maybe because I'm biased and he's my favorite character. I don't know. But I really, really, really want to find out how he's going to handle this and if he can handle this. And I really hope he can.
Definitely. I'm going to say there's some stuff in the promo for season 3, like the main sort of teasing the first couple of episodes that we didn't see in this premiere that I'm excited to see, specifically the Kane and Abby developments. I think that's going to be really nice. And I'm super excited to see what's going to happen to Arcadia when the ceasefire breaks, because even if it's not broken now, it's going to break. And how they sort of, because I know, like, Abby was talking about going to Mount Weather for supplies, so we know it's still around, and we know it's only a matter of time until someone takes it, you know, and uses it as, like, a Two Tower style. You know, they're going to trek to Minas Tirith. No, that's not Minas Tirith. What is it?
No, Helm's Deep.
Helm's Deep. Yes. Hashtag nerd power. Awesome. So yeah, they're going to take all their people to Helm's Deep and they're going to settle in and get ready for the storm and the big fight. And it's probably not going to happen. But if it does, I would be excited for that. I'm excited to see what's going to happen when Clark meets up with everyone again. And I'm excited to see if we're going to discover the farm station. I think that was a really cool reveal. The idea that there are other ARC survivors out there. And of course, I mean, all of the live musical guests that they're going to have on in the Bronze. You know, like One Direction. Yeah. And
yeah. I have to say, I think the things that I am most excited about, like, I want to get to know some of these characters that have kind of been sidelined, like Monty and Miller.
Harper! I didn't even talk about her! She's and back! Monroe. And Monroe, and they were fighting, like, back. Hunger Games style. They've all been training for combat. I'm so excited to see them, too.
Yeah, like I'm super excited to see some of these characters that have been sidelined kind of maybe step forward a little bit, maybe not get full storylines, but learn more about them. I'm desperate for more of the Bellamy story. I know that Kyle hates Bellamy, but I love Bellamy with every ounce of my being. He's my favorite character because he has already come so far from where he started. And I can't wait to see what happens when Clark comes back. He's a different kind of leader. He's earned Kane's respect now. Like, I want to see where that goes. I want to see how he continues to lead these people and be a part of all of that. So yeah, there's a lot to look forward to. There's always so much. There's so many characters. You just love them all. That it's, yeah, it's going to be a good season.
I just want to make it clear, I don't hate Bellamy.
You hate him.
No.
Get real.
I just don't like him. Uh-huh. Like, there's no dislike there. Like, there's, like, just...
I have it on tape, on Hype very podcast neutral. Tape, that you hate Bellamy. Don't backtrack now.
I'm still willing to give Bellamy the benefit of the doubt, clearly. And hopefully this season, I'll be able to enjoy him more. But, I'll let you know if that happens.
Okay.
But I don't completely hate him.
We'll look forward to hearing that. So as we're kind of wrapping up the show, I guess if you guys are like this episode, if you want to hear more The 100 discussion, I'm sure that we're going to be talking about it on Hype a lot, our usual podcast that we do every week. I mean, we might do more specials during the season if you guys want us to, and if we can sort of drum up a collection of hosts. I know Caitlin just tweeted me saying that she's a big The 100 fan and is very upset she wasn't invited. I had no idea, so I just feel so bad.
I totally threw you under the bus.
I know you
did. I didn't want to get in trouble.
I know. It's okay. I forgive you. But so I might do just a Caitlin special just so she can share all her thoughts. But yeah, so we'll keep you guys updated on that on Twitter at Hypeable Hype, and I'll tweet about it from my Twitter too. And on Hypeable, of course, we do our weekly recaps for the show that I recommend checking out because I write them. So there you go. Some shameless self-promotion. And Kristen helps me out with articles. I'm sure Karen and Kyle might have some thoughts as well they want to share. And beside from that, I just really enjoyed this season 3 premiere, and I'm really excited to talk about it with everyone in fandom on the various platforms that we talk about the show. And The 100 airs Thursdays at 9, 8 central on the CW. Please tune in live because they need your rating support. We actually had a bit of a surge in for the season 3 premiere. Actually, they rose slightly from season 2. That's good news according to TV by the numbers. If we're hoping for a season 4, if they can maintain that and grow a little bit, we should be okay, which is quite amazing. Because this show doesn't get huge ratings, but it's clearly a huge fan success. And the CW is not doing a lot to promote it, but the writers are just absolutely incredible at engaging the fan base and building up this network of basically guerrilla, what's it called, like promotion, foot soldiers. What's that called?
Marketing.
Yeah, guerrilla like people marketing. On the street. But so, yeah, so tune in live, and if you like what we have to offer on this special, then please subscribe and listen to our regular weekly Hype podcasts about entertainment and other TV shows and movie news and general developments in entertainment. You can also, of course, subscribe to some of our other Hypeable podcasts that Karen and Kristen and Kyle and I do. You can find all that on hypeable.com, which is hypable.com. You can tweet us at hypeablehype, and you can email us hype@hypeable.com. Thank you so much for listening. Enjoy The 100 Season 3. To be continued, .. Thank you for listening. My name is Lena.
I'm Karen.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Kyle.
We did it, guys. Yay! I don't know how to sign off in Grounder language. I should have looked this up beforehand. I'm going to do it right now. Wait, hold on.
I want to learn how to say things in Trigelda's language because that's amazing.
You gone play Steodon podcast. There you go. Our fight is over for fight being
our
podcast.
Fight is over.
You podcast a Steodon.
Oh, that's so sad. This sounds like we died. Like,
just this episode. It's okay.
Maybe like... also na hit choda op nodo time. Maybe way we meet again. This is awful.
That one.
Not bad, Selena, by the way.
Oh, thank you. I should be a grounder extra. Yeah, it's like Danish. I want to learn this. Or as they say, muchof. Thank you. And then you say pro.
Bro?
Pro.
Pro.
I mean,
pro.
You're welcome.
I heard bro.
Bro. Hey, bro.
You don't grounder bro very much in grounder language. They don't thank you.
No,
they
don't.
Like, thank you, bro.
Thanks, bro. Makes sense.
Like the words I know. Like, thanks for being our Heda.
Yeah. Oh, Heda. Yeah, I didn't know that.